I want to welcome you to another exciting edition of Saturday AM Live. This is Vance Rogers, your host, and sorry about that little time delay for those of you who are waiting to start right at the top of the hour. As I mentioned, I'll do my re-intro again. One of the key issues, one of the core values that I feel is essential in not only the network marketing industry, but in life, and this is one of the things that Stacy and I, my wife and I as parents, with our 9-year-old, Emily, she's always struggled with this concept of friendshipping. And I know that's not really a real word if you look it up according to Webster's, but how do we, in network marketing we call it prospecting, and I really don't really necessarily enjoy the prospecting terms and the words, the cliches that we have like upline, downline, and all this stuff that nobody really relates to in the real world. And so when it comes to taking this gift of Nikan, taking this thing that we've experienced, whether it's a life-altering product experience or whether it's earning a few hundred dollars extra a month and turning around and sharing that with other people, how do you do that? How do you, as the great title of the book is, how do we win friends and influence people? How do we simply make friends if we're not that social? How do we do those things? And so with us today, of course, I'm biased towards this couple because I've learned so many things. During my 42 years of being on this planet, my folks have taught me a lot. And a lot of us will say, if we're honest, well, we learn a lot from our parents, sometimes not so good, sometimes wonderful. And I've always taken the philosophy of, well, they did the best with what they had. And my parents have done better than that. They have taken what they've learned, what they've experienced, and they've always had the mentality of, hey, let's pass this on to other people. So as we jump into this, Dad, Mom, why don't you guys share a little bit of your background of where you came from prior to Nikan, because I think that is the leverage as entrepreneurs, as ones who have stepped out and said, hey, we're not going to fall into the status quo of being what our society calls normal, especially when it comes to an occupation of being an employee and letting somebody else chart our course for us. You guys have always, I've never filled out a job application. I don't know what one looks like because of what you guys have invested into me. So, Dad in the construction industry, Mom, what industry would you call it? But, Dad, just share a little bit about what your background is and how you feel that segued into where you guys are today in Nikan.
Yeah, Vance, it's really interesting, too, because I think back about, just as I graduated the day out of high school and I graduated on Friday night, went to work on Monday morning, and been in the sheet metal industry for 34 years and progressed my way working for a few other places. I was in the union for a while, and that didn't work out. So anyway, worked with my father, and we developed a business where when I worked with him, was only had 4 employees, and when I basically got up to the point where I had 50 employees, and got pretty hectic. But anyway, I've always felt that I wanted to try to do something else. I did a little construction, apartment building, house building on the side with my sheet metal business, and periodically as I progressed along, but always fell back on the sheet metal business, but always knew there was something else I could wanted to do and never felt I could do it.
Well, and one of the things that jumps out to me is that, as you said, started with your father, my grandfather, with 4 employees and built it up to 50, that obviously takes a little bit of social skills. that doesn't happen by accident. And maintaining a thriving business, you're out in front of people.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you feel that's carried over? And we're going to get into some of the specifics, and I want to hear from Mom, too, because in her background. Because a lot of people will say, well, because of that, because you had your own business, because you were already successful in that, and that's why you're so successful in Nikan. And I beg to differ, because I think it comes down to making a choice of, as it says in Proverbs, if you want to have friends, you've got to be friendly. It doesn't happen by accident.
Right.
And how you knew? I mean, I watched you in action, either dealing with vendors or dealing with customers all those years. what was it that allowed you to, or what was it that, you know, was always in, that carries over today that, hey, this is what we have to do as human beings?
And I kind of think it all goes back to your grandfather, because, you know, my dad was real friendly with people, and everybody really liked him, and he got along with everybody and type of situation. But one of the things that really was kind of, you might say, intimidating to me, I didn't feel I could really talk to somebody, you might say, like a doctor, an attorney, or somebody up in the upper class type thing, situation like that. And I always felt intimidated. But as things progressed and as we progressed along, I really felt, got confidence in myself, especially when I got involved with NECAN. And it totally changed. And as you mentioned, you know, building a relationship, a friendship, and that type of situation. And it's developed kind of naturally, I guess, because I guess you have something kind of different from the sheet metal industry, from the health and wellness industry, that you want to help somebody personally, well, not physically, but financially. But that totally aspect of it really changed a lot when we got involved in NECAN. And so it really broadened my, you know, might say, my perspective a lot in that area.
I want to talk about confidence, and before we do that, Mom, you're on the line, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So a little bit of your background up front, so people can have a reintroduction, because some folks don't know. Dad's always been his staple, or his steady Eddie, was the sheet metal industry, and you kind of did a little everything.
Jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah, and I would disagree with that master of none thing, but get a little bit of an idea, if you start from the latest to the earliest, or the other way around, what are some of the things that you stepped out in entrepreneurial, you know, that kind of thing?
Well, after a couple of JOBs, and actually the longest one was with the airlines, that gave me a base to experience a lot of different things actually around the world, and got me into things just because they looked interesting, from importing to, oh, practically you name it. But the thing that I disliked was being in one place at one time, you know, all the time, or a time frame that I had to be someplace, even when I had my own business, which was the takeoff. Once I got away from the airlines, I never went back to doing a job. Everything from having up to 12 kids in the home to owning a restaurant to, actually, when I did the restaurant, I had three other businesses going at the same time. It was like, you know, spinning plates.
Yeah, and so I can attribute it to you why your eldest granddaughter, our oldest McKenna, why she, as we call her, a professional plate spinner, because, you know, she's had a little illness the last couple of days, and it really cramps her extremely active lifestyle, and playing volleyball for two different clubs, taking dance lessons, piano, playing oboe, a Chinese immersion class. I mean, the list goes on. And I need to correct something you said, not correct it, but just further illustrate it. You said 12 kids. You only had three biological, but it was the foster care kids, the single parents that always lived with us. So we didn't have quite a dozen all at one time, but there were times that we had that many people living in our home. Mom, you said something that you always hated, or something that you did not enjoy about being in a job, about working for somebody. And I look at being a job, I have a different perspective in our culture today. When somebody says, well, I have to go to work, I'm always quick to say, no, you get to go to work, because a job is a privilege. They may not enjoy it as much as, you know, the next person, but it is a privilege. There are countries today where they have a 90% unemployment rate, and we're whining and complaining about 10. I mean, come on, people, get over it. But, Mom, you said, you made the comment you didn't enjoy being in the same place every day, all the time. That's why the travel industry was so exciting for you. How is that different today when you work from home and you really don't have to travel? You get to, but how is that different today? Because I know where you guys reside, and I know how you spend a lot of time. So how is it different? I mean, how do you get out and about? What makes you go do that?
It's just that, you have to be out and about in life, and when you're out and about, things happen. But, you know, I want to say that I realize that people really don't understand what we do, because I was asked the other day, somebody came into the house, and I was sitting there working on the computer in my bathrobe early in the morning, and fairly early in the morning anyway, and he asked me, he says, when are you going to retire? And I said, when am I going to retire? I am retired. He goes, no, I mean, when are you really going to retire? And I go, I am really retired. And I said, what's your definition of retirement? Mine is doing what I want, when I want, with whom I choose, and where I choose. And he looked at me and he said, but, I said, there's no but. I'm doing exactly what I want to do. Isn't that what retirement's all about? And the other options are there also. It's not just that, like, I love something and then, you know, I'm going to do that as a career and I've got these boundaries that I have to work within. No, I really don't have to work within boundaries of any kind. Other than misrepresentation. I mean, that, you know, if you want to say that's a boundary, I guess all that a boundary, but I wouldn't. And that was one of the main issues. The other one was it really, really irritated me to have a situation where I could do and work the hardest I wanted to, and I was always taught to do the very best job I could possibly do, no matter what I was doing or where I was or what the circumstances were. Give it my all. It's what my parents always said to me. But in doing that, somebody that gave it nothing could be making exactly the same money I was, according to procedures. That was always irritating to me. I did snitch a couple of times because I thought it was very unfair for somebody to abuse the system.
Sure.
That's what I saw happening.
Now, and I know that looking at family heritage plays a big, big role, because a lot of folks today say, well, go and get go into a profession or get a job because their parents did that and their grandparents did that. That's just what everybody in their family's always known. And yet, one of your great aunts, who passed away a year ago at the young age of 95, and I say young because, my goodness, she ran circles around people half her age and even a quarter of her age in what she did. But she, when you talked about retirement, and she always was one to quick to point out, and she said, you know, there's nowhere in the Bible does it say the word retire. There's no biblical concept of retirement. So why would we even entertain that thought when we're doing something that we truly enjoy doing? I want to go back to something that Dad alluded to when he talks about confidence. How do we, I mean, where do you muster up when you're standing in a grocery store, when you're standing in the line at the bank, when you're doing whatever, waiting to get gas? And I find it really interesting how if we don't open our mouth, it's really, really hard. Or even if we do open our mouth, we find ourselves in scenarios where, as in the other day, just making a simple deposit of a $65 check for a pair of insoles. And the gal looked at me and said, are you having a good day? I said, great. And it was just afternoon, and she said, are you on your lunch break? And I said, lunch break from what? And she said, well, your job. And I looked at her and I said, what's a job? Well, what do you do? I said, you know, half the time I don't know what I do. And she looked at me and said, well, that's the kind of job I'd like to have. I mean, I was simply answering her questions. And my rule of thumb when it comes to bankers is it's a tough sell, because they really don't get it, because they worked hard to get that job and they don't want to give it up early. But they don't want to give it up easily. But how do we do that? How do we walk in confidence knowing that what we have in our hands is, number one, worth sharing, but number two, is easily shared? And I don't care who goes first, but both of you, I'd like you to address that.
It's whatever is happening at the time. It doesn't matter. Okay, maybe I guess the easiest way for me to explain it, how do I get started, is I think out loud. What's going through your mind when you're standing there looking? I mean, you can't have a blank mind. You have to be seeing something, and something has to be going through your head. whatever is going through my head is what comes out of my mouth. That's polite, anyway.
So, Mom, on that subject, if we go back to, there are so many scenarios that I've, stories that you've shared, so many things that have taken place when you're out and about. Let me go back to one, I'm trying to think of, let's go back to how the Dillman organization, Dr. Carol Guth, how she became part of NECAN. And I know the story, but Dad, why don't you share first, and then Mom, we'll fast forward to today and something that happened a few weeks ago of the latest person that's, you know, come on board or that's in the process of coming on board, to kind of give two parallel extremes. So, Dad, you want to tell the story?
Well, it was kind of an interesting situation. It was our first training that Dennis and Ruth Williams was set up for us, and it was February of 1993, and we'd went up to Seattle, and they'd had a pretty good-sized group by that time, and there was about 60 people in the room, and they didn't really know what they were doing. Nobody knew what they were doing, but they were kind of winging it and making things work and everything, and it was kind of an all-day event, and so I got up to go to the restroom. As I walked out the door, this guy standing in the middle of the doorway, and making a long story short, I was going to the bathroom, and he asked the question, what's this NECAN thing? And as the scenario goes, he kept asking questions, and he was kind of disenchanted with network marketing, but as it turned out, he came on board.
Yeah, what was he doing there?
If you want to, I didn't know how far you want to make.
Well, no, it's okay. I'm just curious.
Looking for a building contractor, because the building contractor was supposed to be in some kind of a event or seminar there at that hotel that day.
So he saw a sign or on the door that said
NECAN, and he asked what this NECAN was, and I said, well, it's a Japanese company working with biomagnetic therapy products, and he was an electrical engineer, and so that sparked something in his mind. I didn't know he was an electrical engineer, and as he said, it's a network marketing, and I said, matter of fact, it is, and his tone of his voice is, oh, well, that right there could tell you that he'd been, you know, had some bad experiences with network marketing, but that was one of the things I learned right up front, was that you don't want to be negative about things, And I said to him, I said, well, from the sound of your tone of your voice, it sounds like you might have some bad experience with network marketing. You mind me asking which one? And he said, Amway. And I said, oh, isn't that interesting? Geez, there's a couple in there that had been in Amway for so many years, and they just walked away from it because of what this company has to impact people's lives physically and financially. And I don't know if that's what really caught his attention or what. But anyway, it was about that time we were to the restroom, and I went in and said, hey, goodbye. And so about an hour later, I look back, and he's standing in the doorway, and I look back, and he motioned to me to come to the doorway, and I went, and he said, hey, do you have any information on this? And I said, well, yeah. So we go out to the car, and Shar's handing him a couple tapes, and we got to the point where we're handing him three tapes, and he said, I think one will be for sufficient. And you remember what you said, honey?
Oh, I said, there's really no value in the tape. It's just the information on it. If you're not interested, just toss them in the waste paper basket. And there were tapes run over the top of tapes. From the previous network marketing company that I had worked.
I want to allow enough time here, but there's a couple things that I need to point out here. Is number one, what you just said, Mom, that the tape is worthless. It's the information that's on it, and if somebody's not open to listening to it, it's worthless. It's pointless. So it's a good point to make when handing somebody the CD or any information, or even a product, unless they utilize it. Unless we actually allow it to permeate between, the two ears on our head, that our skull, our mind.
But now I've learned that's not the best comment, because you do want to create value in what you're sending them. So, you know, I would do something different. But, you know, you don't have to be right when you do these things.
You know, and Wendell was a little different because he was open to it. He was the one kind of leading you into it, and not everybody's that way. Not everybody's looking for something. And even if they are, they may have a preconceived idea of not only network marketing, but of something out there. As a lady told me yesterday, this sounds too good to be true. I said, well, you know, sometimes we have to pinch ourselves because we feel the same way. But, Dad, that led you. Wendell had an incredible product experience after an old, old injury on a trampoline when he was a kid. And he introduced you guys to his sister, who is Dr. Carol Guth. And she introduced the Dillmans, Ron and Lynn Dillman, who are Platinum Presidents Club members today. And that all started because you started the conversation guess we have to, ultimately, the moral of the story, or the so what, is we have to be open and be willing to start conversations. And do you find that difficult? Or, I mean, what if I'm not friendly? What if I'm like, our daughter Emily, who just is terrified when walking up to people, that, or even if people she knows, for some reason, she clams up. I mean, how do you get around that? What do you do? Thoughts, comments.
You mean when someone is afraid to talk to people, or just don't know?
How do you start a conversation, Mom? Let's fast forward to a few weeks ago when you were having kind of what I call a three-peat, three different errands, and you got three different people's information in each location: grabbing a cup of coffee, the bank, and at the grocery store. Let's take the banker, for example. How did that conversation get started, and how did that, I mean...
Well, we're sitting down. When you know you've got a few minutes with somebody, it's very easy because just, in them asking, she was there to ask us questions and establish, what our need was and so forth. But at the same time, you don't want to sit there like a dope and
sure.
say nothing except yes, no to her questions. And so there's a friendly conversation. They want to be friendly. They want to create a relationship with you. I mean, you got the best situation in the world there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just when she's writing something, is to say something back to her. And sometimes it's just a comment, not a question. But you should be able to pull something out of her, because otherwise it doesn't show you have any interest in her. She's showing an interest in you. So it's only polite to turn around and ask them something. And my first one's usually, how long have you been here? And I think Dad came in and said, well, why did you choose, what brought you to this bank, or what brought you to banking? And I think that was it, wasn't it, Denny?
Yeah.
And she said, from the time I was little, I always wanted to be a bank teller. And I'm going, I just sat in there looking and listening, and she says, I don't know whether it was the handling of the money or the big amounts of money or what the control of over money. And I'm thinking, gee whiz, she's really got a vivid imagination on being a teller.
Almost like a little girl that wants to grow up and be a princess.
Exactly.
Boy that wants to be an astronaut.
But everything she said, she was no longer doing. In the bank, every single comment that she made, she was sitting behind a desk just collecting information. That's all she
sure.
was doing. And so, I didn't address that. Now, that's one time that when what was going through my mind, I couldn't fit it in. It just seemed like it was almost a slap in the face to
sure.
say, well, you're not doing that anymore. Look where you are. And so I couldn't think of a polite way of saying that. But anyway, she had graduated in the bank, so maybe she felt good about that. But then it was, you look so young, you probably don't have a family. And no, she did have a family. She had a little one at home and two others. And I said, oh, my gosh, and are you full-time here? And she said, yes. And I said, I bet you miss that baby. And she said, yes, I really do. I'd give anything to not be working full-time, and I don't have that option. And then Dad said to her, so if you could do whatever you want, how would you change that? What would you do now? Oh, travel. Well, see, that wasn't easy because I just came back and I said, that was always my thing, was travel. And I never, after I got a taste of it, I never did anything that didn't allow me the travel benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I was given travel benefits with both the major companies that I worked with in network marketing. That was the big thing that was dangling out there.
And for some people, they don't like to travel. That's not even a hot spot for them. So really what you're talking about doing is we have a responsibility to create interest in what Nikan has to offer. But before we even do that, we have to find out what their interest level is. And you do that, you guys, both of these scenarios, Wendell from 1993 to this gal from 3 weeks ago, we have to do that by asking questions. And the hardest part is shutting up. after that question is asked, because we want to be quick to provide the answer. But, you know, as we started this call, when I say good morning, there's a question mark there. It's not really good morning as a statement, but we have to ask those questions. So how do you, when you walk into a scenario, how do you think? And Mom, you answered this a little bit by thinking out loud, because you see something, but you want to ask them a question. But something as simple as what you said, Dad, and how did you phrase it? Is this what the career you've always wanted to go into? Or, I mean, Dad, when you walk into Home Depot and you started a conversation with Frederick, for example, and I don't know what he was doing in Home Depot. Oh, he was working in the wiring department, if I remember correctly. But did you ask him the question, or do you find yourself asking that question? Is this what your dream job?
Well, I compliment him on his personality because he was so friendly, energetic, enthusiastic. And I said, boy, I'd sure like to find some people like you. And he says, to be with my in my business with me. He says, what do you do? And I said, well, I don't want to take time out, you know, in your business here and that. And I said, something to the fact that it takes about 20 minutes to really kind of explain it with. And he looked at his watch and he says, I get off in 20 minutes.
In the reality, and if we can be honest, do you guys get 100% of every single one of these people that you start conversations with?
Frederick's a good example. You know, he was excited, enthusiastic about it and everything, came on board, registered, but hasn't bought one product. And he's got a wife that's his full-time job, basically, after his work, is basically taking care of his wife. That's how...
Because she's dealing with some issues that are, you know, and Frederick's a great guy. I mean, he works at the Home Depot that we go to most often. And but you pointed out something, that his enthusiasm up front was there, and he registered, and he's come to, oh my goodness, how many of our weekly meetings, and yet nothing's ever happened because of hang-ups or whatever the case may be. We don't know why. But that's the way, and I don't like the phrase so much of, you know, we have to go through the numbers. But there's 6 billion people on the planet. Not all of them are going to follow through like we think they are. But you have to keep going, right? You don't just stop.
Well, you know, and the other thing is, it's timing with them. Sometimes it's just not the right timing because of the set of circumstances. And you've got to determine how much time are you going to put into the situation. You can't just sit there and wait for it. They can be the very, very best person in several categories, and yet it's not right, the right timing, and it's not going to happen at that point. So are you going to sit and wait until it's the right timing and then just keep on? No, you just keep going on to people. And, you know, I don't like to throw people away, and my illustration of that is I think there's only one card I've ever thrown away in my life or note about somebody. And that was, I couldn't think of any way to ever get back to her from what she said to me. It was just kind of a really blah situation.
Yeah.
And you know, I thought, gee, I can throw a card away. I mean, she was a nice person. It wasn't that. I've never had, even the ones that tried to be rude to me because I have been accused of not hearing no's,
mm-hmm.
Everything in the end has always turned out right. I had one person say, what part of no don't you understand? And I still called him back, and we had a great conversation 6 months later.
Well, and I think that's the key. When you excuse me, when you address the word timing, it's so crucial. But there is a frustration level that, especially when somebody says, well, yeah, I'll listen to the CD, or I'll watch that DVD, or I'll be part of that WebEx. And then there's not that follow-through. And I know how frustrating this can be. I started a conversation with a gentleman back in February who worked the counter where we get our vehicles serviced, our oil changed. And I asked him that question, how did you get into this line of work? What brought you here? Because he was new. And fast forward to our conversation last week here, 2-3 months later now, and he said, Vance, I'm really sorry I have not taken the time to go through that CD that you gave me. I still am interested in reviewing it. I just can't. He said, I'm working 6 days a week, 12-hour days, and I just can't. And I said, David, that's fine. When the timing's right for you, it'll happen. And I left it at that. It's okay. But you also said, Mom, that we have to move on. We can't be waiting for that person to... We can't put all of our eggs in one basket. We have to have multiple people going at the same time. Do you recommend 3x5 cards or, you know, sticky notes or, you know, how do you keep track of all these people? Or is it we just toss them up in our mind and think that's going to work?
Well, I think Dad has a better system of doing that because I just kind of jump around and I'm still looking for that perfect way of, a 3x5 card is a great idea. As long as you go back and open them up. I guess to me, the people that stand out are the ones that I enjoy the most, that I go back to. But the main thing is you've got to go back to them. It doesn't matter whether they're in a notebook or right now I'm doing them contacts on my phone. I can separate the under... Just like I put them in for a regular phone number, address, everything's down there, and then notes about them. And then I also flag them to be in the, just by putting their name into the prospect list.
Yeah, so it really doesn't matter what system.
It does not matter what system.
As long as you're doing it. And I like the point that you made that the ones that stand out in your mind, that whatever that initial conversation was or how they answered questions that we asked, those are the ones that we're naturally drawn to go back to because it's not there's no real work element into it. Dad, how crucial is it, in your opinion, when it comes to follow up, when it comes to building relationship and rapport, is there a magic timing element in that crucial 24 to 48 hours or a week for some people? Is it an exact science, or kind of is it up to the individual?
Well, it's really up to the individual, but I really feel that it takes, you know, 3 or 4 times to make contact with that person before you might want to even pop the question sometimes. And it was really interesting. I was reading a book here lately, and this is one of the things that Nikan has helped me with a lot, is that I never used to read books at all, and since I got involved with Nikan, I've been reading more than you can imagine. But I read a book about a Russian spy that came to the United States and actually recruited people to spy for Russia. And in the book, it said it takes 6 contacts before you can pop the question. In other words, he had felt he had to build a rapport, confidence, and trust in people before he could pop the question, do you want to go spy for Russia?
which is not a very common question that you're going to hear very often.
Yeah, and I just said, right, I said, that's really kind of interesting because here we're doing network marketing, whatever you want to call it, and we do the same thing. And so it's kind of interesting. No matter what industry you're in,
mm-hmm.
It's like a salesman comes to you the first time. Do you buy the first time? No, he usually comes back a couple times, you know, before you buy. I can think about the kinds of, you know, sales guys that come to my sheet metal business, that type of thing. So
mm-hmm.
it all relates to the same thing. And I think, you know, sometimes you might be able to pop the question right off the front. But, you know, I was with, like, just yesterday, for example, I was getting propane in the motorhome, and this guy was there, and I was talking to him a little bit, and one thing led to another. He hadn't been there very long, and come to find out, he used to be a building contractor.
Imagine that.
And I said, isn't that interesting? Well, make a long story short, I found out that he wasn't married, and I found out he lived in our area, and I found out he used to do a lot of contracting out on the other side of town, and da-da-da. But I didn't even say anything to him about what I did.
Mm-hmm.
But I go, because I know I can go back by there and see him again and when I get propane again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just building that rapport with the people and the confidence. And
I, you know, as both of you are sharing, it goes right back to what you said at the very, very beginning of the call, is that if we want to, you know, expand our business, even if we're not even in Nikan as a business, but we want to share it with other people,